Chapter 8. The Neanderthal Men, an Extinct Race. The Early Paleolithic Age. First, the world 50,000 years ago. Second, the daily life of the first men. Third, the last Paleolithic men. First, in the time of the Third Interglacial Period, the outline of Europe and Western Asia was very different from what it is today. Vast areas to the west and northwest, which are now under the Atlantic waters, were then dry land. The Irish Sea and the North Sea were river valleys. Over these northern areas there spread and receded and spread again a great ice cap, such as covers central Greenland today. This vast ice cap, which covered both polar regions of the earth, withdrew huge masses of water from the ocean, and the sea level consequently fell, exposing great areas of land that are now submerged again. The Mediterranean area was probably a great valley below the general sea level, containing two inland seas cut off from the general ocean. The climate of this Mediterranean basin was perhaps cold, temperate, and the region of the Sahara to the south wasn't then a desert of baked rock and blown sand, but a well-watered and fertile country. Between the ice sheets to the north and the Alps, and the Mediterranean valley to the south, stretched a bleak wilderness, whose climate changed from harshness to a mild kindliness, and then hardened again for the fourth glacial age. Across this wilderness, which is now the great plain of Europe, wandered a various fauna. At first there were hippopotami, rhinoceroses, mammoths, and elephants. The saber-toothed tiger was diminishing towards extinction. Then, as the air chilled, the hippopotamus, and then other warmth-loving creatures, ceased to come so far north, and the saber-toothed tiger disappeared altogether. The woolly mammoth, the woolly rhinoceros, the musk ox, the bison, the aurochs, and the reindeer became prevalent, and the temperate vegetation gave place to plants of a more arctic type. The glaciers spread southward to the maximum of the fourth glacial age about 50,000 years ago, and then receded again. In the earlier phase, the third interglacial period, a certain number of small family groups of men, Homo neanderthalensis, and probably of submen, Eoanthropos, wandered over the land, leaving nothing but their flint implements to witness to their presence. They probably used a multitude and variety of wooden implements also. They'd probably learnt much about the shapes of objects and the use of different shapes from wood, knowledge which they afterwards applied to stone. But none of this wooden material has survived. We can only speculate about its forms and uses. As the weather hardened to its maximum of severity, the Neanderthal men, already it would seem acquainted with the use of fire, began to seek shelter under rock ledges and in caves, and so leave remains behind them. Hitherto they'd been accustomed to squat in the open, about the fire, and near their water supply, but they were sufficiently intelligent to adapt themselves to the new and harder conditions. As for the submen, they seem to have succumbed to the stresses of this fourth glacial age altogether. At any rate, the rudest type of Paleolithic implements presently disappears. Not merely man was taking to the caves. This period also had a cave lion, a cave bear, and a cave hyena. These creatures had to be driven out of the caves and kept out of the caves in which these early men wanted to squat and hide, and no doubt fire was an effective method of eviction and protection. Probably early men didn't go deeply into the caves because they had no means of lighting their recesses. They got in far enough to be out of the weather, and stored wood and food in odd corners. Perhaps they barricaded the cave mouths. Their only available light for going deeply into the caverns would be torches. What did these Neanderthal men hunt? Their only possible weapons for killing such giant creatures as the mammoth or the cave bear or even the reindeer were spears of wood, wooden clubs, and those big pieces of flint they left behind them, the Kelian and the Mousterian implements, and probably their usual quarry was smaller game, but they did certainly eat the flesh of the big beasts when they had a chance, and perhaps they followed them when sick or when wounded by combats, or took advantage of them when they were bogged or in trouble with ice or water. The Labrador Indians still kill the caribou with spears at awkward river crossings. At Dewlish in Dorset, an artificial trench has been found, which is supposed to have been a Paleolithic trap for elephants. We know that the Neanderthalers partly ate their kill where it fell, but they brought back the big narrow bones to the cave to crack and eat at leisure, because few ribs and vertebrae are found in the caves, but great quantities of cracked and split long bones. They used skins to wrap about them, and the women probably dressed the skins. We know also that they were right-handed, like modern men, because the left side of the brain, which serves the right side of the body, is bigger than the right. But while the back parts of the brain, which deal with sight and touch and the energy of the body, are well developed, the front parts, which are connected with thought and speech, are comparatively small. It was as big a brain as ours, but different. This species of Homo had certainly a very different mentality from ours. Its individuals weren't merely simpler and lower than we are. They were on another line. It may be they didn't speak at all, or very sparingly. They had nothing that we should call a language. Second, in Worthington Smith's Man the Primeval Savage, there's a very vividly written description of early Paleolithic life, from which much of the following account is borrowed. In the original, Mr. Worthington Smith assumes a more extensive social life, a larger community, and a more definite division of labor among its members than is altogether justifiable in the face of such subsequent writings as J.J. Atkinson's memorable essay on primal law. For the little tribe Mr. Worthington Smith described, there has been substituted, therefore, a family group under the leadership of one old man, and the suggestions of Mr. Atkinson as to the behavior of the old man have been worked into the sketch. Mr. Worthington Smith describes a squatting place near a stream, because primitive man, having no pots or other vessels, must needs have kept close to a water supply, and with some chalk cliffs adjacent from which flints could be got to work. The air was bleak, and the fire was of great importance, because fires once out were not easily relit in those days. When not required to blaze, it was probably banked down with ashes. The most probable way in which fires were started was by hacking a bit of iron pyrites with a flint amidst dry dead leaves. Concretions of iron pyrites and flints are found together in England, where the galt and chalk approach each other.